Vigaya.
Vigaya.
Understanding.
Understanding.
Shapam.
The curse.
Girisha. Of Shiva. Anuga Agranahi.
One of the principal associates.
Nandishvaraha.
Nandishvara.
Rosha. Anger. Kashaya. Red. Dushitaha.
Blinded.
Dakshaya.
To
Daksha.
Shapam.
A curse.
Visasarja.
Gave.
Darunam.
Harsh.
Yay.
Who?
Cha.
And.
Anvamodan.
Tolerated.
Tat
avachitam.
The cursing of Shiva.
Dvijaha.
Brahmanas.
Translation: upon understanding that Lord Shiva had been cursed, Nandishvara, one of Lord Shiva's principal associates, became greatly angry. His eyes became red, and he prepared to curse Daksha and all the Brahmanas present there who had tolerated Daksha's cursing Shiva in harsh words. So you can repeat.
Upon understanding that Lord Shiva
had been cursed,
Nandishvara, one of Lord Shiva's principal associates,
became greatly angry.
His eyes became red.
And he prepared to curse Daksha
and all the Brahmanas present there,
who had tolerated Daksha's cursing
Shiva in harsh words.
Purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
There is a long-standing dissension among some of the neophyte Vaishnavas and Shaivites. They are always at loggerheads. When Daksha cursed Lord Shiva in harsh words, some of the Brahmanas present might have enjoyed it because some Brahmanas do not very much admire Lord Shiva. This is due to their ignorance of Lord Shiva's position. Nandishvara was affected by the cursing, but he did not follow the example of Lord Shiva, who was also present there. Although Lord Shiva could also have cursed Daksha in a similar way, he was silent and tolerant, but Nandishvara's follower was not tolerant. Of course, as a follower, it was right for him not to tolerate an insult to his master, but he should not have cursed the Brahmanas who were present there. The entire issue was so complicated that those who were not strong enough forgot their positions, and thus cursing and counter-cursing went on in that great assembly. In other words, the material field is so unsteady that even personalities like Nandishvara, Daksha, and many of the Brahmanas present were infected by the atmosphere of anger. Okay, see.
Vigaya shapam girishanuga granir Nandishvara roshakashaya dushitaha Dukshaya shapam visasarja davunam Yechanvamodam stadhavachatam dvijaha. So Omagana Timiranda Shah, Gananjana Shilakaya Chakshurun Viditam, Yena Tasmai Shi Gurave Namaha.
Okay. So, one point is the anger that Nandishvara was feeling was completely appropriate. That was appropriate because that's what you're supposed to experience. If you love someone, you're loyal, and Nandishvara certainly is the carrier of Lord Shiva. Sometimes he's depicted as a bull, and Lord Shiva is actually going different places, being carried by Nandishvara. So the anger was appropriate, but because it was out of love. It was due to his actually love for Lord Shiva. That's completely appropriate. When you get angry because you love someone, someone has been hurt or something like that, I mean, it's appropriate. But his strategy for dealing with the anger was certainly not very appropriate. He shouldn't have cursed. He should have gotten angry, but he shouldn't have cursed. So anyway, you find that comparison there. So in any case,
Cursing is not always bad, though. Cursing is sometimes really good. But when the cursing is done out of anger, then it's not so good. But when the cursing is done out of compassion, you know, that this is the best thing, is a strategy to help the person rectify themselves, then it's actually a very appropriate thing. So that actually involves a whole discussion between restorative justice and retributive justice. Like if someone does something that, you know, is not helpful for them or helpful for you or something like that, and you want to teach them a lesson, there's actually good ways to teach them a lesson other than beating them to a pulp. Although, you know, the traditional system, I don't want to say traditional, not traditional Indian system, but the modern traditional Indian system, going back a few hundred years, that's the way you would teach someone a lesson, by beating them up or, you know, spare the rod, spoil the child, so to speak, like that. And that's also the way that the governments, they try to teach criminals a lesson. If someone does some criminal activity, you teach them a lesson by making them suffer. Of course, American prisons are not very much suffering. I don't know how much lessons they're learning in the American prisons, because, you know, they have gymnasiums there. You don't have to worry about paying your bills. They have exercise machines. It's kind of interesting. They have computers now, internet connection. I don't know if they have cell phones. Sometimes they sneak in cell phones. They have drugs in there. You know, it's not, I don't know how, and they also have very good instruction curriculum on how to be better criminals, taught by the other criminals, of course. And anyway, so there's so many, so that's not really even retributive justice. That's, I don't know what it is. It's no type of justice, just unintelligent justice. So anyway, so the retributive justice means you teach someone a lesson, I'm going to curse them, or I'm going to torture them. Just like in America, there's been this recent controversy about extracting confessions or information from terrorists. And they have these different systems by which they want to extract information. One is called waterboarding. I don't know, I'm not going to describe what it is. But it's actually pretty horrendous what they do to people. It's interesting. Like the present president has actually made these things illegal. And the previous president, you know, he was very much enthusiastic about these things. And people are criticizing the present president. Anyway, I don't want to get into this whole thing. So in any case, cursing someone does not actually change their mentality. Or torturing someone does not actually change their mentality. And we see many instances of inappropriate curses. And some instances of appropriate curses in the Vedic history. Appropriate curses would be, let's say, Narada Muni cursing Manigriva Nalakuvara. Yeah. Manigriva Nalakuvara, they were like in a nudist colony. I don't know if any of you know what a nudist colony is. Anyway, they were bathing naked in the Mandakini Ganges along with the Heavenly Society girls, and anyway, enjoying their life in that way, like elephants enjoying in the water with the she elephants. And then Narada Muni comes along, and the girls actually had more intelligence than Manigriva Nalakuvara. They cover themselves. Whereas Manigriva Nalakuvara didn't cover themselves. They just like said, you know, hi Narada Muni, you know. Didn't even put a fig leaf on. At least in the Bible they have fig leaves, isn't it? You find Adam and Eve with fig leaves on. Anyway, I don't know where that came from. It's not even mentioned in the Bible. It's just like some depiction of some artist. So anyway, so they Narada Muni, he thought, well, they're acting like trees. You know, trees are standing there naked for many, many years, so therefore, let them become trees until they're saved by Krishna, because that's a pretty good curse. You're saved by Krishna. So he was thinking compassionately like that. So, you know, there was no question that it was like uncontrolled anger or anything like that. I mean, he was disturbed at what they were doing, obviously, because it was a violation of the Vedic etiquette. But he uses intelligence to understand how best to rectify these two boys. And eventually, they were rectified. Whereas in other cases in the Vedic system, or in Vedic literatures, I don't want to say Vedic system, there was anger that was not thought about clearly, or even curses that were not thought about clearly as a result of anger. And the result, of course, the result ultimately was good because the people were Krishna conscious, or it was Krishna's plan. I mean, for example, you have many stories of cursing in the Vedic literature. Actually, so many stories now that I think of it. For example, you have Gautama Rishi. And his wife, of course, was Ahalya. And Ahalya was known as one of the most beautiful ladies imaginable. And what happened was that Indra heard about it. Because Indra keeps his eyes out for beautiful ladies. He's a romantic chap. Of course, he has many eyes. And we won't describe or discuss how he got those many eyes. But anyway, he has many eyes that he keeps out for beautiful ladies. So he saw Ahalya and he thought, ooh, she must be mine. But he also was a little scared of her husband, Gautama Rishi, because Gautama Rishi is a sage. You know, sages are actually more powerful than demigods because they have great power, like cursing or mystic powers like that. So anyway, so he thought, you know, how can I enjoy her and get away with it? You know, how can I sneak there? So he snuck there when Gautama Rishi was at the river, and he took the form of Gautama Rishi, and actually, we didn't want to say enjoyed, but he thought he was enjoying. And then he walked out of the house, and at the same time he was walking out of the little hut. Gautama Rishi happened to come, and Gautama Rishi did a double take. Double take means you look at something and go, huh, what's that? You know, just like if I was walking in the door of the temple and I saw myself sitting in the temple, that would be pretty frightening or, you know, shocking for me, isn't it? That's me. No, I'm me. So anyway, can you imagine? You know, you just say, oh, I got to see a psychiatrist. You know, this is definitely a psychotic breakdown. So anyway, so Gautama Rishi thought he had a psychotic breakdown, but then he realized it was Indra. And then as a result, he cursed Indra. Of course, Indra was cursed to lose his manliness, so to speak. But he actually didn't learn his lesson at that point. It's an interesting thing. What happened is that Indra thought, well, this is pretty bad, you know, because I can't carry out what I want to do, you know, in life. My whole purpose in life is actually enjoying. No, he's a devotee. But actually, one of my main purposes in life is enjoying sex life. So the demigods actually came and did some surgery on him and enabled him to enjoy sex life even more by grafting some ram's male parts onto him. Anyway, pretty interesting, isn't it? How they were able to take parts of, even nowadays they take parts of animals and put them on people, like Prabhupada talked about how they would take monkeys out of Vrindavan and graft the monkey glands onto human beings. They were doing that. They used to actually capture the monkeys, you know, the rhesus monkeys in Vrindavan and take their glands and somehow or other put them into human beings so the human beings would have more testosterone. And Prabhupada said, yes, they're taking monkey glands from one monkey and giving to another monkey. Because a human being is acting like a monkey is actually worse than a monkey. So anyway, so Indra didn't really learn his lesson by that cursing. And as far as Ahalya, of course, her curse was interesting. She actually became, there's two versions of the story. One became, she became a stone. That's according to the movie. According to the Ramayana, the actual Valmiki Ramayana, she became disincarnate, which means like ghostly body. So I actually accept the version of the Valmiki Ramayana, not Ram Sagar's version. Ram Sagar is not Valmiki. So anyway, so she became disincarnate, which means she just floated around in the ether around, you know, where her husband's ashram for like millions of years. But she also had the benediction. So it worked out pretty well. Then when Lord Ram came, she would again take on her body and join her husband. So, and then that, this is a romantic story. So by the Lord's mercy, it turned out favorable. You understand? Even though Gautama Rishi's cursing was done out of anger, and it really wasn't appropriate. I mean, it's just not appropriate to rectify someone's consciousness. But when someone is Krishna conscious or has the mercy of the Lord, even if someone curses you inappropriately, you see it as part of the purpose of the Lord, or you learn something from it, which is really interesting. And there's other inappropriate cursings that actually turned out for the best because the devotees were Krishna conscious or because it was part of the Lord's pastimes. Another inappropriate cursing was when Dasarath was a young man. And Dasarath was a young man. He was out hunting or practicing his hunting or something like that. And when you practice hunting, a Kshatriya practices hunting, it's like nowadays the soldiers wear these infrared things on their helmets. You ever seen this? And goggles so they can see in the dark. You haven't seen this? You ever wonder what's on their helmets? That's what it is, infrared light. And then the goggles so they can see in the dark and attack the enemy soldiers. And it's really cool. So in those days, they didn't have infrared goggles. So what they did is they practiced using sound. They could hear something. And just like, somehow or other, you know, by focusing on the sound, they can actually hit the target very precisely. So this is one of the practices of Kshatriyas, an important practice, sound vibration. It's interesting, isn't it? People should learn this. So anyway, so Dasarath was out practicing this, and then he heard what he thought was a deer drinking in some lake or river. Like gurgling like that. I thought it was a deer. But it actually was a young Brahmin boy who was filling up a pitcher for his parents. His parents were blind. So he was filling up a pitcher for his parents. And Dasarath fired the arrow at that sound. And he hit the Brahmin boy, of course. And he heard the Brahmin boy crying out, and he ran to see what had happened. And the Brahmin boy said, "Look, I'm collecting water for my parents. You know, my parents are blind. They won't live without me." And Dasarath, you know, just felt really bad. And he said, "You know, let me pull the arrow out." He pulled the arrow out. And of course, when you pull the arrow out without the proper surgical procedure, a person dies. You know, it actually causes them to bleed more. You should actually, if you ever fire an arrow at something, leave it in until the medics come and let them take care of it. That's just for those of you who are hunting. So anyway, so he fired an arrow, and then the boy died, and then he went to see the parents. The parents came, and then the parents got it really angry with him, and the parents left their body out of separation for their son. And the parents cursed him that he would leave his body out of separation from his son. So, and Dasarath felt very remorseful. There was actually no need for the parents to curse him like that. I mean, it was just, of course, other than it being Krishna's pastimes, we can explain it from that particular perspective, that, you know, Krishna arranged for the parents to curse him in that way, or Lord Ramchandra arranged for the parents to curse him that way, so that later on Dasarath would leave his body feeling separation from Lord Ram. And, of course, the reason he left his body really was not simply because of that curse, was because of the intense separation that a devotee feels from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I mean, anyway, that's the actual reason, although the external reason is the curse. But the curse, in other words, the curse, it wasn't necessary because Dasarath was already repentant. He had already realized he had made a mistake, and it wasn't going to accomplish anything, practically speaking. So there's two ways of looking at it. So in other words, they shouldn't have cursed. Another story, of course, is Pandu being cursed. There's a similar instance. There's many hunting accidents, actually, that Kshatriyas have. There's something to be learned from that, too. That many, many stories when Kshatriyas are going out and they're practicing their hunting and they're killing the poor deer. It's described sometimes when the Pandavas were in exile, They decimated the forest so much that the sages would come and say, you know, you got to move. There's no more deer in this place. So there's lessons to be learned from that. Anyway, so Pandu was out hunting, and he also shot his arrow, you know, by the sound vibration. And in this particular case, it wasn't a Brahmin boy collecting water. It was two deer that happened to be a sage and his wife, the Rishi Kindama, and his wife, who had taken the form of deer because they couldn't get excited about romance in human form. They were too intelligent for that. And they wanted to have children, you know, and they just like, they couldn't, you know, somehow or other they were free from lust in human form. They were just like, they looked at each other and just said, you know, I'm not really interested. You're not really beautiful. Krishna's beautiful. And you're not really handsome. Krishna's handsome, you know. So it didn't really make for such a loving relationship, although they had a compatible relationship. They both had the same psychology. But they had a need for a child. And so, you know, if you have a need for a child, you have to embark upon some strategy. And taking the form of a deer is actually an interesting strategy if you're not feeling any lust. There's actually other stories about that. Oh yeah, Lord Shiva, when he took the form of Shankaracharya, he didn't understand about lust either. So what happened is he had to enter the body of a dead king. There was a king who had just died, and the king, of course, you know, they don't have to, but they're usually pretty lusty. So he entered the body of a dead king, and his wives were crying, and the king stood up and said, "Here I am again, ladies, and let's enjoy." And so in the body of a dead king, the king was no longer dead, but the king was dead. The king had passed away to another body, but the king's body came alive. And so he was able to understand these things. Anyway, so getting back to the sages, the sage and his wife were experiencing life as a doe, a deer, a female deer, you know, like the song goes, and the male deer. And Dasarath fired an arrow at them, and he killed them. And they were dying, and they cursed him also that he would die, even if he even felt or touched his wife in a romantic way. And so, you know, that really wasn't that appropriate a curse either. I mean, it doesn't teach, so Dasarath already felt remorseful. Pandu, I'm sorry. Pandu already felt remorseful about the whole thing. So there was no need to do that. But it was part of Krishna's plan, because Pandu later on left his body, being attracted by Madri, who happened to, anyway, she was an attractive young lady. And so then later on, the Pandavas were appropriated by the different demigods. So anyway, so that's also a curse that really was not appropriate, but it was part of the Lord's plan. So you see actually interesting curses like that. Another curse that was appropriate, let's get back to an appropriate curse, Nandishwara again, Nandishwara, Lord Shiva's bull, was guarding Lord Shiva's abode. And then who happens to come along but our friend Ravana. And Ravana, you know, he had interesting ideas of challenging all the demigods, especially challenging Lord Shiva, establishing his supremacy. So he walked in to Lord Shiva's abode, and Nandishwara was there. Actually, he tried to fly his airplane into Lord Shiva's abode, but the airplane just wouldn't work. It stalled out, and he had to go for a crash landing right before he hit Lord Shiva's abode. Anyway, and then so he saw Nandishwara, and he laughed at Nandishwara, and he said, you know, you look like a monkey or something like that. And then Nandishwara cursed him at that particular point. What did he say? He said, you're going to be killed because of a monkey. And so that curse was completely appropriate, because it was part of the Lord's plan, part of the Lord's pastimes, and Nandishwara understood this. So that curse was appropriate, as well as the curse that Parvati gave him later on when he lifted the hill, Kailash Hill, and he scared Parvati, and Parvati grabbed Lord Shiva, and Lord Shiva put his foot down or his toe down and trapped Ravana's arms underneath the hill. So also, that curse was appropriate because Parvati cursed him that he would die because of a woman. Also, Vedavati, who was Sita Devi in her previous incarnation, cursed him that he would die because of a woman. So those curses actually had some, you know, there was the right mentality when they were cursing. Whereas some of the other curses, like Gotama Rishi's curse and Rishi Kindama's curse, there wasn't the right mentality, but everything worked out all right because of the Lord's plan. So the whole point is that when we are cursed, or when something happens to us, because actually this material world is like a curse anyway. We've all been cursed to get old. We've all been cursed to die. We've all been cursed to get sick, regardless of what you're thinking, you know, how many raw food diets you follow, isn't it? So regardless of that, if we take it in the right way, of course it's right for Durga to curse us too. That's not an inappropriate curse, because Durga actually has her thankless task of teaching us a lesson. Now, that's another point that's really interesting. Like karma and Durga's actions, they're actually meant to rectify us. That's like restorative justice rather than retributive justice. I mean, what we're experiencing in this material world is not meant to make us suffer for the sake of suffering. That's a really important point. That it's not that Durga is just so damn angry at us, he just wants to make us suffer because we're actually envious of Krishna. Just like the government sometimes wants to make the criminals suffer just because they've done something wrong, or people like to see people suffer because they've done something wrong. That's called retributive justice. But Durga is an advocate of restorative justice, which means that she gives us suffering, but for the purpose of rectification, not for the purpose of suffering in and of itself. So that's what karma is about. Yes, karma, Durga, threefold miseries, adiatmic, adibodhic, adidaivic, do make us suffer, but there's a purpose behind them. And the purpose is always, I'd say, perfectly planned to bring us to the higher platform as soon as possible. Do you understand? And even Krishna arranges. Like, we find that Krishna, what is it called? Yashyaham anugrinami harishe tadanam shanai. Krishna says, for those who I especially favor, I take away everything. You may say that's a curse. But actually, it's not done out of anger. It's done out of compassion to help us ultimately take shelter of him. You know, all the things that we're attached to in this world, you know, the whatever it is, will ultimately be taken away either by the time factor or by Krishna directly, out of mercy for his devotees. And the whole point is to actually use these circumstances that we would consider to be unfortunate as stepping stones to achieve the ultimate goal of Krishna consciousness. So anyway. So in other words, we're all being cursed and we're happy about it. Because ultimately, that'll be for the best of our Krishna consciousness. You understand? That's the point. I mean, we want things to be taken away. We want, like Hari, that's the name of Krishna, means he who steals. He who takes things away. So we want inauspicious things to be taken away. We want things to be taken away that interfere with our advancement in Krishna consciousness. Although we may not appreciate exactly why Krishna is doing it, when he's doing it, but maybe 30 years later we do appreciate it. Or maybe when we get back to Godhead we appreciate it. Well, now I understand. Just like my own Krishna consciousness, I can understand why things happened 30 years ago, but I didn't understand why they happened when they happened. You know, so many things happen. I don't want to go through the story of my miseries or sing the blues or anything like that. But so many things happen that were just like, I mean, just like, for example, I was in one country, which would be nameless, And I was doing very well. You know, we had the biggest Sankirtan temple in the world, practically speaking, beating Radha Damodar. And then the devotees one day decided to have a revolution. And then they said, Maharaj, I wasn't Maharaj, it's time for you to leave the country. And they said, if it's good for your health, that's the best thing for your health, to leave the country. And I said, well, I'm in good health right now. And they said, well, you don't understand, you know, how your health could be affected if you don't leave. I said, yeah, now I understand. So anyway, it was very painful because I was very dedicated to the mission there. But I can see that, you know, Krishna had another plan like that. Or like with Prabhupada and his household life. You know, it must have been very painful to have a wife who interfered with his preaching, sold his Bhagavatams for tea biscuits, isn't it? Who just like went into the room when he was preaching and just like, and took a feather duster and blew dust in the faces of all the people who was attempting to preach. It must have been painful, you know, Prabhupada as a person. But ultimately, you can see Krishna had a plan. So, yes, painful things will happen, but Krishna has a plan. We should have faith in that. So any questions or comments about these things? Yeah. Yeah.
About anger when it is inappropriate. What, for example, if I'm angry with someone and I'm blaming that person, and I'm completely in denial, but at the same time, I have like, I have very strong insecurities, and this denial is actually a defense to keep me, you know,
yeah.
How well I'm doing, so that keeps me going on.
Right.
In spiritual life. So if this denial, you know, is taken away, then I may just crumble to pieces and not be able to.
Yeah, you may need that at that particular time.
That.
Yeah, yeah, you may need that. You may need that crutch at that particular time. That's true, but to be aware of what it is, I think to be self-aware, to ultimately work on it. You know, we can't expect people to give up a crutch right then. But just like if you have a crutch, you're using it, you have to just plan on giving it up eventually, right? Unless you're permanently disabled. But I mean, if you broke your leg, it's not that you're going to use a crutch for the rest of your life. You wait until the leg, but you understand the crutch is something temporary you're using, and you understand that ultimately I'm going to be giving up the crutch. Yeah, so, yeah, obviously, we have to be practical like that. But in the long run, it's a different thing. Okay, all glory is to